Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Mona Awad's latest We Love You, Bunny revisits the unsettling, surreal world she created in her cult novel, Bunny. The novel begins with Samantha Mackey, now a published author, returning to her old MFA program on book tour. What should be a triumphant homecoming quickly turns sinister when she encounters her former classmates, the Bunnies, who are furious about the way she portrayed them in her fiction. Instead of polite reunion, Sam is kidnapped, forced into the role of captive listener as the Bunnies recount their side of the story. They reveal the origins of their uncanny sisterhood, the strange rituals that bound them together, and the dangerous creative experiments that blurred the line between invention and monstrosity. At the center of it all is the haunting tale of their first creation, The Bunny Boy. Awad delivers a novel that is both razor-sharp satire and gothic fairy tale. It is filled with humor, menace, and the strange intoxication of belonging. The new book, We Love You, Bunny, is out from Simon & Schuster, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Mona Awad to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's a pleasure.
Was there a point, a moment, where you said, okay, I want to visit this world once again?
Yeah. When I finished writing the book, Bunny, back in 2018, I just really missed the world of it so very much. You know, the characters kind of just kept calling to me. And then the book started to kind of have a life online a couple of years later. And so, you know, when that started happening, when readers were finding it and they were making their own art out of it, they kind of helped to keep it alive in my head. And I felt inspired to kind of follow my heart and go back to this place that I longed to go back to.
So tell me about what you mean when you say make their own art out of it.
Yeah, I mean, readers have made illustrations of the characters. They've made tattoos. One reader made a sculpture of a bunny boy being axed. A band has written a song about the book. there's been a lot of creativity like around this book, sort of imagining and expanding the universe and the characters. Which has been incredible to see as a writer. It's kind of what you dream of, right?
Absolutely. And it is, but, and yet rare because you dream about it, but it to have that kind of call and response must be very gratifying.
Yeah, it really is. And I think part of it might have to do with the fact that the book is very open-ended. Like there's a lot of room in the story because it's mysterious for readers to kind of make their own meaning out of it and for them to imagine, you know, themselves into it. And I kind of wrote it on purpose like that because as a reader myself, those are my favorite books, the ones that kind of invite me to kind of make my own meaning out of the story.
When did you feel in going back, was there an idea that there was something that you wanted these characters to say? There's something that you wanted to explore? There's questions that you had?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Bunny is written from the perspective of Samantha Mackey, who is like an outsider student at this college, this New England college.
Right.
And she's seeing these girls, these bunnies, you know, through the eyes of an outsider. She's an outsider in the group. She doesn't belong. And they're villains to her, you know, and they are villains in the book, I would say. But what was really exciting to me was imagining like, well, what would they make of her? You know, like, what would they think about her framing them that way? Because she's a writer. She wrote a book called Bunny. They're writers. What do they think of that book? You know, so that was kind of my point of entry, was sort of imagining their rage, you know, at her version of events. Yeah.
And it allows you, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but to address the business that you're in of writing and writing stories and dealing with the slings and arrows of how people react to what it is that you put down on the page.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, as a writer, you're vulnerable to the response that you get from readers and critics. That's just the name of the game. That's putting yourself out there as an artist, and it is. It's. I mean, it's. It never gets easier, is what I've learned. I always feel vulnerable when I'm sharing something, but that's good. That means that there's something there to share. That means that there's something at stake in there for me. And so, yeah, I had a little bit of fun with that in this book, for sure.
Again, the name of the new book is We Love You, Bunny. You say, and the publisher makes this very clear as well, but it is not required that you read the first one, although probably more fun that way, I would think.
I think that if you've read Bunny and you're familiar with that world, you'll have a very particular experience of it. Like you'll be able to get all the Easter eggs and, have a lot of fun with how like things are being reversed and subverted in the book, it'll just be, I think, a particular pleasure that way. But I did write it in such a way that if you found We Love You Bunny first, you would be able to read it and still follow it. And you could read Bunny after. And then I think your experience of Bunny would be kind of crazy. So, which could be fun,
Yeah.
yeah,
As it becomes like more of an origin story then.
that's right. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
As far as the fact of these the characters as the bunnies recount their side of the story, it's a fascinating part of the novel because the ire, the rage comes from so many different places and for so many different reasons, and it hits differently depending on each character.
That's right. Yeah, they each have an agenda. I think they have an agenda collectively as a group because Samantha has devastated them in her book Bunny, which is the book Bunny that I wrote.
Right.
So they're pissed and they want to kind of correct her version of them, and correct her version of them as artists especially. But they each also have an individual agenda. They're each individually like inclined to make a claim of authorship and creativity as well. Like I'm the one in the group that made the magic in this story possible. I'm the reason that we can do this thing that we do where we turn bunnies into boys. It's me, Bunny. I'm the one. And that was really fun. That was a really good engine for the story, is kind of just imagining that they each had a stake in correcting Sam's version of events by telling their own story of how they created this boy. Yeah.
In that creation, talk about that and as the word that is used is drafts of what goes into that and that idea that I would think it certainly is fun to read, I assume is fun for you to play with as well.
Oh yeah, it was really, really fun. I mean, I loved the idea of kind of literalizing the creative process, because the creative process, it is very mysterious and it feels like magic. It's like transformation. There's nothing there, and then suddenly you've got a story, right? With people and a world and an atmosphere and a setting and things happen. It feels magical to create that. So in the book, these girls, they create boys out of bunnies. That's how it works. And there's always this violence that happens in order for that transformation to occur. And this book is the story of how these girls made their first man, their first bunny man. And I wanted to tell the story of how they did it, how they uncovered it, this ability that they have to do this thing. So it's kind of literalizing the creative process that way. But I also wanted to show his perspective of what it's like to be created. What is it like to kind of come into the world as a creation, which is very much drawn from Frankenstein. Frankenstein was a major influence on this story. I wanted to kind of explore that relationship between the creator and their creation, and sort of ask the question that Frankenstein asks, which is, who is the monster here? Because, this creation, and I don't think this is a spoiler, has some monstrous qualities.
Mona Awad is our guest. The new book is We Love You, Bunny. a novel. It's published by Simon and Schuster. When you started writing Bunny, that was a departure for you. That was a different type of book. You started to write a book of fantasy and surrealism. How did that feel at the moment of doing that?
It was very scary. You know, I mean, my first book was very realistic, you know, kind of linked collection of stories about a woman grappling with body image, very much set in this world. You know, no surreal elements, but I love the surreal and I always have. I love fairy tale. I love horror. And I think both of those genres sort of allow people to explore very internally real things that happen to them, you know, heartbreak, you know, having you know, a really difficult childhood, you know, being attracted to somebody that maybe you're afraid of or something like that. You know, horror and fairy tale allow us to explore that using magic, you know, but it's a real thing. And so I've always wanted to do that. And I think at the time that I finished 13 Ways, which was my first book, the realistic book, I just decided to kind of give myself permission to try it. And it, yeah, I was super scared. I almost gave up, but it was such an exhilarating feeling to use the surreal. It felt more real in a way to use it, if that makes sense. That I had to figure out how it ended and I had to try. Yeah.
13 Ways of Looking at a Fat Girl. And that book struck a chord with a lot of people. So it would seem like it's a step then to say, okay, I'm going to move from that world, even though what I just did is successful.
Yeah. It felt really scary. But it was like bringing a part of my own, creative sort of heart, bringing that part home and giving it a try on the page. And I just thought what it has to do that 13 Ways also does is no matter how far I venture into the surreal, it still has to feel true emotionally and psychologically. And the characters still need to feel like characters that readers can be invested in and have a stake in. And that's kind of how I do it now. You know, that's kind of how I use the surreal. I use it to amplify the emotional or psychological reality of like what a character is going through.
The word is probably overused, but of creating its own world, its own universe. But the cool thing about that, I would think for you, is that you're setting the rules and deciding where you can go and where you shouldn't.
That's right. I mean, and often the rules are being set too by like the characters and the environment that they find themselves in. So, you know, in Bunny, part of the permission that I had to explore the surreal, and it's part of the reason that I'm able to explore it in We Love You, Bunny, is that it takes place in a creative writing program. You know, these are creative writers. These are people
Yes.
who make fiction. I mean, they live in their imaginations. So it's not that much of a stretch to bring the surreal in there, you know, which is fun. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, this would be a hotbed of imagination. Everybody's imagination kind of at war with each other. And how much fun would that be?
So when you make the decision, and you described this earlier in our conversation, but when you make the decision to expand that Bunnyverse, there is a risk attached
Sure.
with that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there was a risk, you know. I mean, the readers who really love Bunny are very attached to their understanding of how the story goes down, their understanding of the bunnies. And so to kind of subvert that story with this kind of new framing and enter into the bunnies' heads was dangerous. But it also just felt like it had to be, like I had to do it, you know. I just decided it was more important to follow the bunny trail. So I did.
We were talking just a moment ago about the rules of the Bunnyverse, but the fact the ethics, you look at that question of the ethics of creation. That's something that you explore in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I kind of believe this, and I think there are other writers who believe it too. It's kind of woo-woo, but I do believe it. I do think creativity is ultimately mysterious. I do. And how you arrive at writing a song or making a piece of art or writing a story, I'll just speak for myself. It's just you can never map it. You know, there's always some weird leaps, some accidents that happen that make it feel like, oh my God, how did this thing happen? It's not something I can ever teach completely. Like you just have to be able to have some kind of gift, I think. And so, you know, that was something that I think I really wanted to explore in that book, the mystery of creation. If it is mysterious, it has its own life, you know? And so the bunnies are creating life. And when you create life as an artist, well, you're responsible for that life, aren't you? Like, I mean, there's a responsibility attached to bringing something out into the world. And so I don't know, I'm always mindful of that as an artist, and I kind of wanted to really have fun with that in this book.
Because in the book, in the novel, there's a point where writing becomes almost a violent act, which is fascinating.
Yeah, it is, but it is violent. I mean, so many writers use violent terminology to talk about their writing. You know, I'm gonna slash this. I'm gonna, you know, kill your darlings. That's a writing term, you know. In workshop, there's something called the gag rule, which is where when you share your work with a group, you can't talk. People are gonna talk about the story all around you, but you can't say anything. I mean, it's so violent, the metaphors that we use. And I don't know if that's like some kind of weird guilt about the fact that we're living in our imaginations and we wanna make it feel higher stakes. So we use these violent, you know, verbs and phrases to kind of make it feel like it's super, like, you know, high drama. I don't know if it's that or if it really does actually feel violent, you know, like there's something violent about making a life on the page. I think there is. And you know, that's how it feels for me when I'm working. So I think that's part of the reason why I brought it in there. It's in the culture of creative writing, but it's also, I think, my experience as a writer.
Because that's a fascinating thought, that the most beautiful of writing, the most beautiful of prose, comes from what can be a violent place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I can kill a character with just a few clicks of my keyboard. Right? I mean, I can do that very easily. I always think of Nabokov describing the death of I think his mother in Lolita. In parentheses, picnic lightning gets rid of her. Picnic lightning, that easy. You know, to just do away with somebody. You know.
But you don't really have that luxury, do you? I mean, because you have an audience, you have a fan base, and you have your own standards of what it is. Yes, you can do that, but you do
You
have to
can.
think it through.
You have to think it through. And that's part of the ethics is like, for me, part of the ethics is just is honoring the mystery of it, you know, honoring the fact that this is a life and not over determining the story or its meaning, not having too heavy a hand. You know, that is incredibly important to me. So I try to do that. I mean, you know, as best I can as a writer. And I feel like the work that I love is work that I think does that in its process.
When you write about an MFA, as you write about an MFA program, is that a world in because it's a world in of itself, right? It's certainly something that you know, but also something that has a lot of baggage with it that can be unpacked and explored and is really interesting in that regard.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's such a strange world. It's so culty. It's very occult also, because, you know, very, very few people can get into these programs. So when you get in, you feel like, oh my God, I went through this strange door into this like weird world, and I gotta really perform, otherwise, you know, I wasted this opportunity. And it feels so high stakes to enter this very cloistered environment where for a period of time, you're just gonna focus on getting better at this thing that you love and that you it means so much to you. You know, but you're doing that in a group with other people who want the same thing that you do. And so it can get, you know, the ambition, the envy, the vulnerability, the insecurity. I mean, it's all fodder for a horror novel.
You did your MFA at Brown University and then PhD at Denver.
Yes.
And I assume they all have little scraps of them are what show up in Warren University in the Bunnyverse.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, and especially, certain workshop dynamics, which are just inevitable. Like now I teach in an MFA program at Syracuse, and I see it all the time. And it's this thing where when you're a young writer, but this happens to me even now, you put yourself on the page. You use your life for your fiction. You do. And so, you have a relationship to the characters that are in the story, but everybody is reading it as fiction. And they're commenting on it and judging it. And it feels like they're judging you. You know what I mean? Like it feels like that's what's happening in the end, is you're being judged, you're in the hot seat. And it's very, very hard as a young writer. And I'll even say that it continues to be hard for me now to kind of make that separation. Because sometimes there is no separation on the page. It's just an inevitability, I think.
Do you ever feel judged by your students?
I mean, probably all the time. Yeah. I mean, you know what? I don't know if I feel judged, but I worry about being judged. I worry so much as a teacher about making the wrong move in a class. And I never thought when I was a student that that would be how a teacher might feel. I always thought a teacher just has so much power, and I'm just this student in the class. But it's the opposite. I think being a teacher is a position of profound vulnerability, where you're constantly worried about that. And that's something that I do explore in We Love You, Bunny. I think that book is very informed by my own experiences teaching too, not just being a student, but also teaching.
And you like that. I mean, you enjoy teaching. That's something that you that is beneficial to you, I would assume personally, but as well as professionally and in your writing, fodder for your writing.
Yeah, I mean, I love talking about work that I love with young, excited minds, that think in unexpected ways and have fresh takes on work. And I love talking to young artists about their hopes and their dreams and trying to help them as best I can. It's all feels really important and good to do. When I'm teaching, it is very hard for me to write, though, because I tend to give myself completely over to that role. So my work tends to be written, when I'm outside of campus, when I'm not teaching in the summers and on breaks and things like that.
Was this book faster to write than Bunny because you had some of the groundwork already laid down?
Yes. It came more easily. I mean, it's a pretty complex book in terms of its structure, I would say, just because it has five narrators. Bunny only has one. But because I knew the world, it just felt so much easier. It was very, very pleasurable. Bunny felt so scary because I truly had never done anything like it before, and I just didn't know that I could pull it off, you know?
Do you know you're pulling it off when you're doing it? I mean, in the sense, now that the book Bunny was a hit and this book is out and is so anticipated and is already getting great reviews, I mean, do you have a sense? I mean, I'm fatalistic about these things. I think
Yeah.
everything, you know, that I do is probably horrible. But
Sure.
when you send it, but there is also a moment where you look and say, okay, I feel good enough. Just the fact that you say, I feel good enough to send this out, that sort of gives it an approval.
Yeah, I think the truth is we know when something is good. I
Yeah.
feel it inside of myself. Like an intuition tells me, oh yeah, this is working. This feels like it's alive. And that's the mystery. That's the mystery, is I can't pin down, not even for my students, what makes something feel alive versus what makes something feel dead. But you know when you're working with something that feels alive. And when it feels alive, I think you feel like, oh yeah, I can keep going with this. And when it feels like you haven't quite found that thing, you probably haven't found it, you know?
And the top of the new book, Margaret Atwood says, "Oh, Bunny, you are so genius." Margaret Atwood, a fellow Canadian writer, and is has really been quite a cheerleader for you.
She really has. And that has been amazing because her work was so important to me as a young writer. You know, I mean, I'm also Canadian, so that's part of it, I think. But also, it's just the stuff she chooses to write about. You know, she's very bold. She plays with genre. She loves fairy tales. She is very subversive. She's also very irreverent. And that's the thing I love the most about Margaret Atwood is there's always kind of a twinkle in her eye. There's always a wryness at the end that makes me feel safe and makes me feel like, okay, this is going to be fun. Even if we go to dark places, this writer is still having fun, you know? And that's really important to me.
Has she given you advice?
Yeah, she told me to say F it more, which I'm trying to do. I think that's good advice for everyone, frankly.
Now, just in knowing you for the 25 minutes that we've talked, it doesn't seem like you would have trouble with that.
No, I do have trouble with that. And I,
You?
yeah, oh yeah. And I think when she met me, I had more trouble with it, you know. But it's important, I think, to remember, and it's advice that also I have heard from, not personally, but on television from RuPaul, is not to take yourself too seriously. I think that's ultimately what the good advice is about, is just not to take it too seriously. You can take you know, love seriously and you know, family seriously, friends seriously, but maybe don't take yourself too seriously because that's when you get into trouble.
But
Yeah.
you do take the work seriously.
I take the work very seriously. But I also, if I'm not having fun, I know there's a problem. Yeah.
Mona Awad is the author of the new novel, We Love You, Bunny. It is published by Simon and Schuster. Mona Awad, what a great pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for being with us. It's an absolute delight to have a conversation with you.
Thank you so much, Joe. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mona Awad's new novel is We Love You, Bunny. It is published by Simon and Schuster. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.